I think, like you said, it's entirely understandable that such a large majority of people feel that vigilantism is justified. Obviously, it's a reflection of desperation on the part of communities with regard to the failure of the state to provide what is really its most fundamental responsibility, and that is to provide security to the citizenry. And when that failure has been sustained over such a long period of time, communities naturally feel that something has to be done, and vigilantism, in a sense, is an easy thing to do. You know, it doesn't require complexity. You just do it. You quote unquote take justice into your own hands. So I think it's eminently understandable. I don't think that it is productive and that it produces sustainable peace in communities in the long run. But I understand how it comes that people feel as they do.
Yeah. In a broader sense, in terms of our definition of, or the definition of vigilantism or mob justice, I think people, there's a fair level of agreement in terms of the very definitions thereof. I think where people perhaps differ is in terms of the justification, with some obviously a majority in terms of the respondents of this poll saying, yes, it is justified, even though there are examples of which mob justice has not turned out well for those who perpetrate vigilantism and mob justice. What do you make of sort of that dynamic as well?
Yeah, you know, the problem, or let's say the reality, is that there are two dynamics here. The one is when you, as a community, decide to take, let's say, to practice mob justice, what you are doing is that you are creating an internal community conflict, because gangs and gangsterism does not exist outside of our communities. I mean, the young people who are involved in gangsterism are people from our communities. They were not sort of, you know, beamed from Mars and now suddenly we find them here. So what you are doing is that, in a simplistic way, you think you're solving a problem, but actually you are creating additional community tensions. That's the one problem. The other problem, obviously, is that we have laws in the country. And so you practice this mob justice, and you know, the law then applies to you. I mean, similarly, like, you don't want people to be breaking laws, you know, you also shouldn't. Now, obviously, there is the frustration, and this is the where the complexity comes in. I mean, people also feel that they cannot go on forever living in a society where the police doesn't do what it is meant to do. But there are other avenues. I mean, other avenues as in cooperating with the police, other avenues going up to the point of changing the government. If you feel that the government has failed dismally in providing you with the basic need of security, you know, you have a vote. I mean, you can get rid of them. So in the end, you fall victim in two ways. One, by becoming embroiled in an intra-community conflict, and the other one by becoming really a victim potentially yourself of the law and the justice system.
Yeah. I want to get to the lessons that perhaps we can take from your book, and particularly from that experience, your involvement in the state's intelligence efforts in attempting to dismantle PAGD in the late 1990s and early 2000s. I think there certainly is a fascinating story from what I've read in your book around how that came about, how that was viewed by the intelligence services, and perhaps you know, how that essentially played out.
Yeah. So, you know, we I would say there are many lessons we learned, Ashraf, and one lesson we didn't learn. Now, obviously, at the time, remember, we now go back to 1995, early 96, where you have a new government in place. Now, obviously, you can't expect a government to resolve challenges that's been building up for 300 years, you know, in a year or two. I mean, it takes a long time. So at that point, there was zero justification. I mean, the kind of justification that you hear now for vigilantism simply did not exist then, because the government had started changing laws, policies, you know, and so on, and had to be given time, obviously, to do what it needed to do in terms of dealing with gangs and gang violence. I think the main lesson from dismantling PAGAD's paramilitary infrastructure, not PAGAD as such, because the issue was never with PAGAD as a, let's say, a public organization. The issue was obviously with the fact that there were some people in PAGAD organized under the leadership of PAGAD who were engaged in violence. Now, the lessons there, which I think are very applicable to today when we are fighting organized crime, is how do you build potent intelligence capabilities so that you can combat organized crime, so that then consequently from there you can reduce the violence that we are seeing in our townships. How do you build intelligence capability? I mean, how do you build the right kind of leadership, and where do you find these people? How do you deploy these people? There are so many lessons from that experience that can be transported in one way or another to today. Obviously, conditions have changed, but you know, some of these lessons are more or less fundamental and can be transferred, and should be, in fact, so that you can have a capable police that can deal with organized crime and can deal with gangsterism, not the police we have at the moment, which is incapable and has many other problems too, with corruption and so on, poor leadership. The one lesson we didn't learn when we were targeting PAGAD's paramilitary infrastructure, the purpose was obviously to defeat it and to dismantle it, which we did successfully, but it was so that the state would be given space in order to deal with a real problem, which was gangsterism and organized crime. Now, what did not happen was that the state did not take the opportunity which was provided by dismantling PAGAD's paramilitary infrastructure, the G-Force, to make the interventions, to take the actions that it needed to take in terms of dealing with organized crime and gangsterism. There were a few initiatives, and these were more or less personal initiatives. You know, you had Jeremy Vieri as station commissioner in Mitchell's Plain, building a very strong police community movement against crime and against gangsterism. But this was far and few between. It wasn't directed as a whole of state effort and a whole of society effort, which is what you need to deal with this kind of fundamental problem.
What I am hearing you also touch on perhaps is the realities of the lessons that were learned or that were not learned, as you touched on. And I guess it also ties back into a question that we asked today and that South African citizens asked today in terms of the existence and the effectiveness of crime intelligence in 2025 in addressing the myriad of issues of crime in the country. And many people feel a bit aggrieved in the fact that, you know, an organization like PAGAD, although perhaps they were considered and viewed by the intelligence services then as a vigilante group, that they were actually making a difference on the ground. They were targeted, but these cartels in 2025 cannot be successfully dismantled and taken down.
Yeah, so just very briefly, because this is not the focus of the thing. When PAGAD was targeted, I mean, it was justified targeting them because, you know, the one thing about vigilantism is that it never produces sustainable solutions. So they had to be targeted. But now let's leave that aside. What we have not done, what the state has not done, was to target organized crime and gangsterism in the sustained way that it should and in the sustained way in which it targeted PAGAD. That is undeniable. I mean, I was central to the dismantling of the G-Force, and I can say it without sort of, you know, it's obvious. I mean, people are dying on the Cape Flats, in Eldorado Park, in KwaMashu, because of criminality that's run out of control. You have an institution called crime intelligence, which is supposed to deal obviously with high-level organized crime. That high-level organized crime in Manenberg, Guguletu, or Philippi, it materializes, it manifests in gang violence, right? Yeah. Now, the institution quite clearly has been a dismal failure. I mean, it's not, you don't need to be an intelligence specialist to know that. I mean, you just look at the levels of crime and you can see it. What are the causes of this failure? Because that is where we have to start. The causes of the failure, and one could contrast it to the example of the work we did, and there are some other excellent examples of proper intelligence work, is in the first instance that at the political level, there is no seriousness about dealing with organized crime. Whereas with Paget, there was a great commitment. And by political level, I mean up to the president. So you can't deal with the scale of organized crime and criminal violence we have in South Africa without a president who says, this is one of my key priorities and it has to be solved. That's the first problem. The second problem is that you have a subpar quality of leadership in crime intelligence. You can't deal with a sophisticated criminal ecosystem when you are led by people who are incompetent. It's like playing football. You bring Barcelona and you put them against a team that is in Manenberg, sort of last on the local league log. Obviously, the outcome is predetermined. So that is the other problem we have. The third problem we have is that there is no strategy for how do we deal with this thing called organized crime and gangsterism. You need a strategy. You can't just willy-nilly, even where you find police officers who are putting their lives into fighting this thing. And they are getting nowhere. They are getting nowhere because their individual efforts are simply not enough. You need a national, a coherent strategy and an effort to deal with this. The last thing is that what we did when we combated Paget was we built a capability. Intelligence is a weapon, right? It is a weapon that you deploy in order to destroy certain things. Criminal enterprises, for example. Now, the people that's currently, not all of them, of course, but by and large, that's running our police apparatus and our crime intelligence apparatus are people who clearly have proven themselves incapable of building capabilities. That is to say, building capabilities that are weapons that can be deployed against crime, not capabilities like I have so many thousands of people in this thing called crime intelligence. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. You know, if it can't be used as a weapon, if it can't have effect in Manenberg or Philippi or wherever else.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, a really fascinating perspective and take from your book, and applying, I guess, some of those lessons to the current circumstances in 2025. Yes, there will certainly always be debates around whether or not the correct approach was taken, etc. And I guess that is always going to be a subjective viewpoint. But I think certainly what I'm taking out of this conversation is the fact, or the lessons that were not learned, and you touched on that numerous times, and I think that's sort of the stark reminder of what could be achieved if we look at the attempt to dismantle Paget, and what could be achieved if, I think, an equal amount of effort is put into dismantling organized crime and gangsterism in 2025.
Yeah, that is exactly the case. Put in the effort, develop the strategy, appoint the right people, and give them the freedom to do their work without interfering in it. You know, that is what was given to us. We were told, listen, there's a job here. Can you do it? We said, yes, we can do it. What do you need to do it? We need this to do it. Here are the things. Go and do it. There was no one who interfered. You know, I mean, there were people who interfered, but they were always sort of swatted away. But we were capacitated and we were given the operational freedom to figure out for ourselves how are we going to do this, and then we did it, you know. It's I mean, I don't want to say it's as simple as that. Obviously, it's complex. I mean, organized crime and gangsterism also much more complex than Paget was at the time. So you need a much more comprehensive approach also that's not just about policing. I mean, there are social circumstances that one has to take into consideration, but these are not impossible things to challenge.
Yeah, certainly a fascinating conversation, and I would encourage our listeners to go ahead and read your book, the book entitled, of course, Lives on the Line by David Africa. He's a security and intelligence analyst, and of course was part of the team, and if I'm not mistaken, David at some point led the team in dismantling the Pegged G-Force, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yeah.
So I would encourage our listeners certainly to get their hands on that book and go ahead and have a read at it. Certainly fascinating conversation, David, and I thank you so much for your time this morning.